and welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Sandra Astor-Stave, and today I'll be reading from The Economist magazine dated May 23rd, 2024. We'll begin as usual with the World This Week politics. Tens of thousands of Russians used a federal election to protest against Vladimir Putin, bravely displaying anti-war banners and queues in polling stations and silently marking their ballots with the name of Alexei Navalny, the opposition leader who died in an Arctic penal colony last month. No serious opponents to Mr. Putin were allowed to stand in the tightly managed election. The president decided to allot 87% of the vote to himself, 10 percentage points more than in the previous sham election of 2018. America, Britain, and the EU condemned the Russian authorities for suppressing opposition to Mr. Putin's regime. The election was also held in the regions of Ukraine that Russia has invaded, including Crimea, which Lord Cameron, the British Foreign Secretary, described as abhorrent. China, India, Iran, and North Korea congratulated Mr. Putin. The American Union member states and the European Parliament reached a deal that extends the liberalization on imports of Ukrainian goods for a year. In a nod to protesting farmers, some products such as poultry and oats were added to a list of items that are safeguarded against imports flooding the market. Wheat and barley were also not on the list. Leo Varadkar said he would step down as Prime Minister of Ireland, an announcement that took his countrymen and their own Deputy Prime Minister by surprise. He said his reasons were personal and political without giving any future details, though the government recently suffered heavy referendum defeats over altering the constitution. Fine Gael, who heads the governing coalition, was chosen as a new leader in the coming weeks. Vaughan Gething was confirmed as the new First Minister of Wales by the Welsh Parliament. He is the first black person to hold the post. For the first time, none of the leaders of Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland or the British Prime Minister is a white male. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader in America and one of Israel's staunchest supporters in the Democratic Party, called for early elections, saying that Benjamin Netanyahu, the country's prime minister, had lost his way. Joe Biden endorsed the message. Mr. Netanyahu agreed to send officials to Washington to discuss Israel's plan for an invasion of Rafah, which the American president has suggested is a red line. Mr. Netanyahu insisted that the offensive was still necessary. Antony Blinken, America's Secretary of State, said that Gazans were facing acute food insecurity and that it was the first time an entire population had been so classified. He is pushing Israel to prioritize the provisions of humanitarian aid. Israeli forces again raided Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza. Israel said that it was targeting Hamas's officials who had regrouped there despite Israel's claim to have control over the area. Jake Sullivan, America's national security advisor, confirmed that Marwan Issa, the deputy commander of Hamas's military wing, had been killed in an Israeli airstrike. He is the group's most senior leader to die since October 7th. The military junta in Niger revoked a military accord with America under which roughly 1,100 American troops have been based in this country since fighting jihadists in the Sahel. The announcement came after senior American diplomats told the junta they were concerned about growing ties with Russia and Iran. The UN warned that 5 million people in Sudan could face catastrophic levels of hunger because of civil war and because both sides in the conflict, the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces, are obstructing the delivery of aid. The UN said it had not been able to cross the frontier lines, reach parts of Khartoum, the capital, since October. Donald Trump cannot raise $454 million to pay the penalty awarded against him in a civil trial, according to his lawyers. The penalty was handed down by a judge to Mr. Trump for fraudulently inflating the value of his assets. He has asked an appeals court to put the judge's decision on hold while he launches an appeal against it. Over 1 million abortions were performed in America last year, 10% more than in 2020. That despite the Supreme Court's removal of women's constitutional protection for abortion in 2022. The Guttmacher Institute, which compiled the data, said abortions had surged in states that border the 14 states where the procedure has been banned. Abortions were up by 72% in Illinois and by 257% in New Mexico, for example. Hong Kong passed a new security law covering acts such as insurrection and sabotage. Critics fear it will be used to target dissidents. The authorities in Hong Kong moved quickly to approve the measure at the behest of China's central government, which has tightened its grip on the territory. Vietnam's ruling Communist Party forced the resignation of Vo Van Thong as president. He had been in the job a little over a year, following the similar abrupt dismissal of his predecessor. The sudden exit appears related to an anti-corruption drive by the party. Analysts worry that the campaign is beginning to threaten the country's political stability as competing party factions use it to tarnish rivals. Singapore's opposition leader Pritam Singh pleaded not guilty to two charges of lying to a parliamentary committee. Mr. Singh's Worker Party has been challenged, the People's Action Party, which has ruled Singapore since 1959, ahead of a planned transition of power. The Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong is preparing to hand over his job to his deputy, Lawrence Wong, before an election that is due by November of next year. Jair Bolsonaro, Brazil's president from 2019 to 2022, could face a criminal indictment for the first time after police proposed that he face charges on altering his COVID certification card to say that he had a vaccine in order to travel to America in 2022. Mr. Bolsonaro insisted he had never had the jab and denies any knowledge of the records being interfered with. The World Meteorological Organization confirmed that 2023 was the warmest year on record for the average global surface temperature of 1.45 centigrade above pre-industrial levels. The UN agency listed some of the effects of the warmer world. The global sea mean sea levels reached a record high. The extent of Antarctica sea ice hit a record absolute low, and food insecurity has increased. And now to business. The Bank of Japan raised interest rates for the first time since 2007. The target rate for overnight loans was raised from between minus 0.1% and 0 to between 0 and 0.1%, making the BOJ the last central bank to end a negative interest rate policy. It first took rates below 0 in 2016. The bank also ditched its yield curve controls, which capped the yields on long-term businessman bonds. The change in direction has been signaled for months, but Yuri Kazu, the bank's governor, said it would maintain accommodative financial situations, and the bank will still buy about 6 trillion yuan a month, this government bonds. The Federal Reserve has left rates unchanged at its meeting. Investors were more interested in the Fed's dot plot of the path for interest rates, which suggested that it still expects to make 3-quarter-point cuts this year. Markets soared. Reddit placed its shares at $34 ahead of its debut on the U.S. New York Stock Exchange, the top end of the price range it had submitted to investors. The social media platform IPO was heavily oversubscribed. After years of fighting with extradition from Britain and 10 months under house arrest, Mike Lynch went on trial in San Francisco over claims that he fraudulently had misstated revenues at Autonomy, a software firm that he sold to Hewlett Packard in 2011 for $10.3 billion. HP subsequently took a huge write-down on the value of its acquisition and alleged that Mr. Lynch, Autonomy's founder, had deceived the company. The prosecution says it is the biggest case of fraud in Silicon Valley's history. Mr. Lynch denies the charge. His defense counters that HP mismanaged Autonomy. Under pressure from activist investors, Unilever set out a restructuring plan that could see it shed 7,500 jobs, about 6% of its workforce. The consumer goods conglomerate is also spinning off its ice cream division, which includes the Magnum and Ben & Jerry's brand. Ice cream accounts for 16% of Unilever sales, but prospects of the business's growth are melting. Apple reached $490 million settlement over claims that it misled investors in 2018 about strong demand for iPhone in China. In January of 2019, the tech giant admitted that its business in China was struggling. The lead plaintiff of the investor's lawsuit in the pension fund for the English county of Norfolk, Apple denies any wrongdoing. Intel is to receive $8.5 billion in government grants and up to $11 billion in public loans to build or expand factories in Arizona, Ohio, New Mexico, and Oregon, the biggest beneficiary yet of the Biden administration's program to boost chip making in the United States and ensure the country dominates the market for high-end chips. Intel is pledging to invest $100 billion in American chip manufacturing. The public money it receives will be tied to production benchmarks. Meanwhile, NVIDIA unveiled the Blackwell Graphics Processing Unit, its latest line of chips for its artificial intelligence, which will greatly increase the computing power of large language models. Containing 208 billion transistors, the new chips could cost up to $40,000 each. George Lucas said he supported Disney and its chief executive, Bob Iger, in its fight against Nelson Peltz, an activist investor who is seeking two seats on the board in order to overhaul the business. Mr. Lucas, the creator of Star Wars, is one of Disney's biggest individual shareholders. His Lucasfilm production company has been a Disney subsidiary since 2012, and his endorsement is a big boost for the company. Mr. Peltz takes his proxy battle to the annual general meeting on April 3rd. The Biden administration unveiled sweeping new vehicle pollution rules, which it hopes will ensure that some new cars and light trucks sold in America are either pure electric or hybrid by 2032. The new standards require car makers to raise caps gradually on the amount of exhaust pipe pollution the vehicles emit, but does not ban them. The regulation comes amid a weakened demand for EVs in America and will probably be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court. Xiaomi, one of China's biggest makers of smartphones, published a solid set of quarterly earnings. The company is making a diversion into the EV market, delivering its first electronic car on March 28th. Bentley Motors reported its second best ever annual profit. The luxury car maker made lots of money from record levels of customers ordering bespoke vehicles. One customer reportedly wanted wood from his personal forest to furnish his car's interior. Israel alone. At a moment of military ascendancy, Israel looks vulnerable. There is still a narrow path out of the hellscape of Gaza. A temporary ceasefire and hostage release could cause a change in Israel's government. The rump of Hamas fighters in South Gaza could be contained or fade away, and from the rubble, talks on a two-state solution could begin, underwritten by America and its Gulf allies. It is just as likely, however, that ceasefire talks will fail. That could leave Israel locked in the bleakest trajectory of its 75-year existence, featuring endless occupation, hard-right politics, and isolation. Today, many Israelis are in denial about this, but a political reckoning will come eventually. It will determine not only the fate of Palestinians, but also whether Israel thrives in the next 75 years. If you are a friend of Israel, this is a deeply uncomfortable moment. In October, it launched a justified war of self-defense against Hamas, whose terrorists have committed atrocities that threaten the idea of Israel as a land where Jews are safe. Today, Israel has destroyed perhaps half of Hamas's forces, but in an important way, its mission has failed. First in Gaza, where its reluctance to help provide or distribute aid has led to an avoidable humanitarian catastrophe, and where the civilian toll from the war is over 20,000 is growing. The hard-right government of Benjamin Netanyahu has rejected plans for post-war Gaza to be run by either the Palestinian Authority or an international force. The likeliest outcome is in a military reoccupation. If you add the West Bank, Israel could permanently hold sway over 4 to 5 million Palestinians. Israel has also failed at home. The problem goes deeper than Mr. Netanyahu's dire leadership. A growing settler movement and ultra-Orthodox population have tilted politics to the right and polarized society. Before October 7th, this was visible in a struggle over judicial independence. The war has raised the stakes, and although the hard right parties of the coalition are excluded from the war cabinet, they have comprised Israel's national interest by using the incendiary rhetoric, stoking settler violence and trying to sabotage aid and post-war planning. Israel's security establishment is capable and pragmatic, but no longer fully in charge. Israel's final failure is clumsy diplomacy. Fury at the West was inevitable, especially in the global South, but Israel has done a poor job of countering it. Lawfare, including spurious genocide allegations, is damaging its reputation. Young Americans sympathize with it less than their parents do. President Joe Biden has tried to restrain Mr. Netanyahu's government by publicly embracing it, but failed. On March 14th, Chuck Schumer, Israel's greatest ally in the Senate, decried Hamas's atrocities, but said Israel's leadership was lost. In a bleak picture that is not always acknowledged in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv, Mr. Netanyahu talks of invading Rafah, Hamas's last redoubt, while the hard right fantasizes about resettling Gaza. Many mainstream Israelis are deluding themselves, too. They believe the unique threats to Israel justify its ruthlessness and that the war has helped restore deterrence. Gaza shows that if you murder Israelis, destruction beckons. Many see no partner for peace. The PA is rotten, and polls say 93% of Palestinians deny Hamas's atrocities even took place. Occupation is the least bad option, they conclude. Israel would prefer to be popular abroad, but condemnation and anti-Semitism are a small price to pay for security. As for America, it has been angry before. The relationship is not about to rupture. If Donald Trump returns, he may once again give Israel a free pass. The seductive story is a manifesto for disaster. Consider defense. The damage to Israel's reputation could make it hard to fight on in Gaza. The long-term threat is from Iran and its proxies, including Hezbollah. Deterring this requires a military partnership with America that needs bipartisan backing and ideally Gulf Arab support, too. The economy depends on tech exports and experts with access to global markets. And rather than making Israelis safe, a permanent occupation poisons politics by emboldening the hard right and breeding Palestinian radicalism. Israelis are right that there is no partner for peace today, but they are best placed to break the cycle. Israel's trajectory will intensify in ethno-national politics and pose legal threats to the economy. An estrangement from the West deepens, so deterrence may weaken. Firms could be backlisted. Bosses could lead high-tech businesses abroad, or if they're reservists, be arrested there. America must Israel avoid this fate. And if it fails, it will itself pay a heavy diplomatic price. Best would be a temporary ceasefire, opening a route to a two-state talk. Without this, American policy will need resetting. Mr. Biden's early embrace has failed, but so would coercion. If America tried to force Israel out of Gaza while Hamas could still regroup, curbing military support, or withdraw its support at the UN, Israel's security could be in jeopardy. America should therefore use other means. It should dispense more humanitarian and unilaterally and decline to supply weapons for invasions of Rafah, given the lack of civilian provision. It should broaden sanctions against settlers and right-wing fanatics to show Israeli voters that America underwrites their security, but not extremism or permanent occupation. And it should continue to signal that it is keen to recognize Palestine as part of the two-state peace negotiations. America, however, can do only so much. Most Israeli wars are followed by political upheaval. Removing Mr. Netanyahu will not be easy, but when the reckoning comes, it will be huge. The war has shattered many illusions, that the Palestinians can be ignored, that the PA has any appetite for reform, that anti-Semitism is rare, that Israel can pay lip service to two states as settlements expand, and that a hard right can be tamed. The good news is that there is grounds for hope. Polls suggest that centrists in Israel command perhaps 50-60% of votes. Institutions like the Supreme Court are still strong, and better leaders exist. A struggle for Israel's future awaits. The battle in Gaza is just the start. A line in the sand. Pro-lifers want America's Supreme Court to cut access to abortion pills. It should refuse. American women are thought to have more abortions today than they did before the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. The main reason is probably abortion pills. Safe and effective, cheap and convenient, and small enough to fit in an envelope, they enable many women to have an abortion without leaving home. The pills account for nearly two-thirds of terminations in America, up from almost a quarter in 2011. Partly because the Food and Drug Administration has loosened rules about their use and distribution. No wonder pro-lifers want the Supreme Court to clamp down on them. Medically and legally, that would be an error. The court will hear the case on March 26, the first on abortion since it ignited a nationwide battle over reproductive rights by scrapping Roe. The Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, a conservative group, wants greater restrictions around the mifepristone, a drug typically used in combination with another, mistriprol, to induce abortions, arguing that the FDA's rulings have been arbitrary and capricious. It wants to restore a strict 7-week limit on the pills, as well as requiring that only doctors can prescribe and provide it, and that must be in person. That would be a bad outcome for women's health. The pills are safer than Tylenol and have fewer complications than late-stage surgical abortion. It is also cheaper, less invasive, and more convenient than surgery, especially for women who cannot easily get to a clinic and when prescribed through telemedicine. Pill-based abortion has risen globally in England and Wales and much of Scandinavia. Around 90% of terminations now use pills. During the pandemic, which limited visits to doctors, trials found that remote prescriptions of abortion pills have many benefits and no added risk. Restricting the pills use to 7 weeks of pregnancy makes no sense medically. If anything, the FDA's current 10-week limit is too restrictive. The World Health Organization lists the pills as safe and effective for abortions up to 12 weeks. Although women now detect and terminate pregnancies earlier than in the past, 49% of abortions in America still happen between 6 and 12 weeks. 94% take place in the first trimester. Without the pills, most of these women will still have abortions using either different pills or surgery. But the options tend to bring more hassle, discomfort, and a higher rate of medical intervention. Siding with the plaintiffs would also give a bad legal outcome. Courts should require strong grounds to conclude that a regulator has a terminal assessment wrong. If judges can substitute their own expertise for the FDA's, it will weaken America's system of regulation, especially if test cases are charged with issues that have empirical evidence as strong and the plaintiffs are suffering no concrete injury. Anyone with a cause, from moral objections to contraceptives to conspiracy theories about COVID-19 jabs, will be encouraged to sue the FDA. Meritless challenges against other agencies will proliferate, too. The case presents an opportunity for the justices to rein in judicial activism. Our hope is that the Supreme Court took it on chiefly for that reason. It can best do this by coming down unanimously in favor of the FDA. That's all the time we have today. I've been reading from The Economist magazine dated March 23rd, 2024. I'm Sondra Astor-Stave. So long until next time.